worldwide. Every weight class. It's Lewis Heaton. Whiskey Bynum. It's the Boxer Rush Hour Show, hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. You know what you came for? Yes, indeed. This where you come to get your info. Listen up. Other shows throwing the towel.
It's the Boxer Rush Hour Show. Let's go. In the ring, we throw hands, octagon elbows. Analytical, critical commentary is necessary. A bevy of opinions, we heavy on the winning. This podcast is to break down the pay-per-view. For boxing purists, yo, let this man through. We rise right, surprise sight at the prize fight. Hands taped up and gloves tied tight. Ring the bell, want some, get some. Let the chip fall where they may work the George Crumb.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Rush Hour Show. I am your host, Abraham Gonzalez. As always, music intro music by Lewis Heaton. And the podcast is powered by nyfights.com. Boxing coverage from around the world with an NYC edge. And ProBox TV. ProBox TV is a new boxing streaming service that provides 2 to 3 live events per month, original documentaries, behind-the-scenes content, along with a podcast that includes Paulie Malignaggi, Antonio Tarver, and Roy Jones Jr. Visit ProBoxTV.com for details. All right, guys, we have a big weekend, Memorial Day weekend. We have Gervonta Tank Davis versus Rolando Romero. It's going to be an interesting fight, we don't know what's going to happen. But in discussing that and last week's fights, I brought in Lucas Cattell from ITR Boxing, and we get into all the haps of the sport. So please enjoy this episode interview with me and Big Dog Lukey. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Rush Hour Show. My next guest is returning. He's a returning guest. He is Big Dog Lukey, Lucas Cattell from ITR Boxing. Lukey, what's up?
What's up, man?
Hey, listen, man, a lot of different things going on, a lot of announcements, but I want to, you know, first dive into last weekend, Showtime, right? They were from Glendale, Arizona. David Benavidez, he just annihilated David Lemieux in 3 rounds. I mean, we knew this was going to happen, but man, he was there giving them the business from the start, man. Did you get anything out of that?
I mean, it was pretty cool. I know David Benavidez is good, but like, it was, Lou DiBella said it best. It's like, it wasn't a matter of if Lemieux was getting knocked out. It was simply what round. It was like, it, all intents and purposes, he got stopped in 1 round, but we got to see him beat up Lemieux for 2 more rounds. Lemieux didn't fully look in shape. Lemieux didn't really look like he wanted to kind of fight. Like, he wasn't looking Big David in the eyes. Respect for David for taking the fight. I like that David Benavidez has a little bit of that FU, like Mike Tyson attitude. But I mean, no, we didn't learn a single thing about it. David did what he was supposed to do, beat up a guy who he's better than.
Now, one thing that shout out to David Phillips, who writes for NYFights.com. He wrote a story that David Lemieux should stop. And one of those indications came in the post-fight conference where he didn't really sound too good, kind of slurring his words a little bit. What does David Lemieux do right now, and how should we think of David Lemieux if he does hang him up?
Well, I think that like trucking companies seem to make people a lot of money, like car dealerships, like that's what he should do. Maybe a youth gym program. He's had a lot of hard fights. I mean, look, David Lemieux is the fighter that's hard to look at in history, but he's like the guy that loses to the guy that's really good. But he really held his spot. In that, like when Curtis Stevens tried to take that spot and be the guy that's going to lose to the guy potentially, he's like, nope, I'm not giving up that spot. So like David Lemieux is the guy that beat a Gabe Rosado. He beat Curtis Stevens, but then he loses to Golovkin. He loses to David Benavidez. He's kind of like one of these guys where he's the hall of very good, but he can't beat the great guy. And it's like, he's a spectacular knockout guy, kind of in his prime, was kind of like less dynamic Golovkin, like very kind of like a better Beav. I guess they have ties kind of with coaches, very stoic, big puncher, no nonsense. Had one of like the coolest, most macho backstage weigh-in things I've ever seen. Like the girl he was dating, like literally like undressed him in front of us. Like, and it was like a big room. And I was like, I hope one day I'm that cool where I could like basically get down to my underwear, have an attractive, like, I'm sure it was like his wife, just like do this super attractive move on me and just like not even care that people were around. So like, that's my lasting image, was like sheer like macho confidence at the what was it, Canelo Chavez, like the back room area.
Oh wow, okay. So I mean, that's pretty much it for the Showtime card, because
it was awesome. We're not gonna go Yo Elvis going 10 rounds, ding ding ding.
No, we're gonna quickly go over to the ESPN card now. This had a lot more interesting stuff. On the ESPN Plus side, we saw, you know, Carlos Balderas do his thing. We saw your guy, Charlie Sheehy. And
Charlie Sheehy. Yeah.
We saw Duke Reagan victorious. What did you make out of the ones that were on the ESPN Plus card? And Adam Lopez, of course, escaping a near disaster situation. What did you think of the ESPN Plus cards, and what got your attention?
I want to be biased and say Charlie, but Charlie wasn't on the televised portion of the card. He got another spectacular knockout, 3-0, three knockouts, lightweight. We're going to call him a stud muffin. I know that sounds a little weird, but we're going to call him a stud muffin. I think that, like, who are the guys that start off 3-0, three KOs at lightweight, like Roberto Duran and like Alta. So let's just make the comparison right now to him and Chavez and Roberto Duran. No pressure, Charlie, just live up to this. Look, Duke Reagan's really good. Like, I don't know if people don't know this, but Duke's really good. I saw some people on the internet like being down on him because he went four rounds. Look, man, he's really good. He's going to be really good for a long time. He's really good. Carlos had a hard fight. He hits really hard. His defense, I think it's improving, but like there's room for improvement there. But Carlos really talented. He got past a really tough guy that had fought in Ruben Villa, now trains with Ruben Villa. And I'm just a fan of Adam Lopez. So to see it with Adam Lopez outside of the Oscar Valdez fight, the Adam I've seen in the gym, I've never seen in the ring. So I'm waiting for him to put it together, but I keep getting the feeling Adam's going to be like an all-time great coach. And his career is going to like have that Steve Kerr like career where he hits coaching with like a head of steam. And he's like a youthful coach that kind of like people forget he was a great boxer and he just becomes Adam Lopez, the coach. That's kind of like what the way I look at Adam's career right now.
All right. And then on the main card, it started off with old Tiger Johnson, a guy that, you know, people should really be paying attention to if they're not already. Tiger handled his biz on a third round KO. Is Tiger being placed on the opener of this card? Are we going to now see Tiger fast tracked a little bit as far as exposure?
Exposure, yes. Seeing him in hard fights, probably no. Like they'll probably ask for him, but why would Brad and Bruce, Brad Goodman, Bruce Trampler, why would they rush a really good fighter? And like, even if they want, like, because sometimes you don't know what you want in life. Sometimes you'll be like, you know what? I want to start trouble with this really tough guy. And then when you get to the really tough guy, you go, oh man, he's really tough. Like, it's not really that fun, but it sounds good when everyone's around, right? So I think like the problem with young fighters is Tiger Johnson realistically is as good as any fighter, but the only thing he needs is experience. He needs what you can't learn. You have to experience it. You have to go through these fights. He's doing as good as any fighter's doing to this point. And he's got Prentice Brewer around him. He's got Safo, and he just kind of feels like a special fighter. That being said, he's getting down to 140. There's going to be opportunities for him probably around next year. You're looking at guys like Gabriel Mertala, I believe, is around there. Maybe in a weird world, if he gets super fast track, Barbosa could be there, but there's always going to be names. Jose Ramirez is around there. So like, if he wants to get going, there's names, but I think that Tiger is a guy that there's no need to rush things. Just try to let it happen and let him gain experience. Because if you think about it as an amateur, he actually stayed amateur a bit longer to be an Olympian. And he actually got better as it went. So I think he's a guy where it's just, not saying to go the Joshua Buatsi route of 6 years, but maybe just like let the typical 3.5 year Olympic cycle to a world title would be fine by me.
Gotcha. And then we went over to the co-main, Jermaine Ortiz against Jamel Herring. Now, you know, Jamel came in here, new coach, you know, trying to see what was going on at 135, moving up in weight. But what it seemed like was towards the middle rounds, his mind and heart was in it, but his body wasn't able to catch up to what he wanted to do. And it's called getting older, right? He's 36 years old and those things happen. Now, at times they'll happen on one night or they'll happen gradually. It seems like it was a little bit gradual coming in, but then it kind of all happened on Saturday night. So, but Jermaine Ortiz did what he was supposed to do. 10 years younger, he was supposed to, you know, be the younger, stronger guy. Jamel gave it what he can do. Looks like he's going to retire from here and go into broadcasting and other things. But your thoughts on the fight?
I know everyone's on pins and needles because they think I hate Jamel. So people, all those instigators are like right next to the speaker. They're like, what's Lukey going to say? Look, man, I thought it was kind of sad because like no one wants to see a world champion, a guy that served this country and an Olympian trying to do the things he used to do. And he's just a step slower with a younger guy. And it's like, I first learned this when I watched the UFC fight with a guy that's actually like someone that no one would remember, Ben Rothwell. And it's like he's older fighting a younger guy. And it's like it almost, I don't want to compare it to like alcoholism, but it shows you your like demons in fighting when you can't do what you get away with your raw talent and you try to do it and you're older. And then all of a sudden you start getting lit up. It's kind of like watching a grizzly bear go blind right before they die. There's like, you kind of maybe if you've never seen it, you want to see it. You're like, okay, maybe that'd be interesting. But the minute you start to see it, you just feel bad. Like watching this happen to Jamel, it's like no one wants to see a fighter have this type of fight and then say they're going to take a red eye back to their child. And then no one really wants Jermaine Ortiz, who's a very likable guy, to have to do this to a guy who's been for his whole career very likable. It's a very like Larry Holmes Ollie scenario. So though it was a great performance by Jermaine Ortiz, I think it's overshadowed by the humanity portion of this, where it's hard to look at this fight and remove emotion from it.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. And you're right. He had to go to his daughter's graduation the next day. So still trying to fulfill, you know, his duties as a father and a husband, you know, shortly after, you know, going through 10 rounds of boxing. So whatever he does, I think he's going to be good and successful.
I mean, you should be rich. Like, I mean, you won, like you're rich, get some investment funds. I've heard the Boring Company is a really good investment. Find some stock options, IRAs. You're good. Just kick back, open up a car dealership or something. Like you're good.
Yeah.
The worst thing you can do is go to the boxing gym, start sparring the kids. That's like when all the boxers, like it's like the alcoholic that goes to work at the bar. Like I stopped drinking, but now I'm going to go work at the bar. All I tell is when fighters retire, stay away from the boxing gym because that never goes good.
Yeah. All right. Now moving on to the main event. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. We'll just say Jennebeck. He destroyed Danny Dingham in 2 rounds.
Should Danny have been qualified to be in this fight? Keep it that wow with me.
No. This, you know what? This almost reminded me of when Canelo Alvarez fought Rocky Fielding.
This reminded me of like when Sid Vicious fought like a guy on WCW television and put him on a stretcher. Like it's literally like a guy who was not really like a pro boxer fighting potentially the best middleweight in the division and getting absolutely annihilated. Like imagine if you told someone this is a world title fight in boxing and they go, this is the highest form of boxing at the historic middleweight division. And it's no one's fault other than the sanctioning body that said, we deem this as the second best middleweight in the whole world. Jennebeck is one and no shot to Danny Dignam. It's just, your skill sets to me did not deem a number two ranking based off of both your performance and your fights leading up to this.
Yeah. I tell you, Danny Dingham, he didn't have a chance at all. But for Janet Beck, this means, you know, everything. You know, people who weren't, you know, onto him are now onto him. His video of the knockout is making its rounds through social media. So it did the job as far as elevating his popularity within the sport.
I mean, I think people don't super care. He's going to have a belt. He's going to come out. He's been trying to do the Kazakh style theme song for a while. It hasn't really caught on. I just think he's going to be like a Zordo Ramirez, where he's like a champion, but people forget about him. And then like Golovkin's about to retire. Charlo's about to move up. He's realistically probably the best middleweight in the world right now, but it's going to take him a year or two of just fighting people for people to go, oh yeah, he's a guy. And then the other thing is, can he headline a venue? Where do you put him? Do you put him in the LA market? Because that's another thing about filling that role of that spot is, where does he put butts in seats? And I guess like the Oxnard area or whatever. But if you can't quite fill into that, it's also hard to say that you're one of the major guys in the division.
Yeah, no, it's going to be hard. And especially with now that, and we'll get into this in a little bit, you know, Triple G is going to be occupied. Charlo's got a fight in June. So like, where does he go? Maybe Boo Boo Andrade, whatever, injury, shoulder, like we don't know what his situation is. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. I don't think that we get any clarity or he gets a big fight until next year anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's just really good. Like, he's really good. He's really technically sound. It's just kind of like the age-old problem in boxing. We want to see good fighters fight each other, and boxers have like died broke. So now the boxers are like, hey, hold on, let us get 2 years of making a ridiculous amount of money so then we can give you that fight and not go broke. So it's like, it's a little give and take right now. We're, as fans, we want to see it. As fighters, they want financial stability and to like make up for lost time of their colleagues who are not living as well as they probably should have.
Gotcha. And we're going to go, we're going to take a step back for a second and go on Friday night. Pro Box TV had their inaugural show, where they have a new streaming app, and they had a tournament called the Last Chance Tournament, which I thought was interesting for guys that is self-explanatory. It's a last chance for them to get some sort of recognition. So you had guys like Joseph Fernandez winning against Ziming Wang. We had Kendall Castaneda, first round TKO. Michael Dutchover won a split decision victory. So, you know, they had some good fights there. It's the fights were being called by Paulie Malignaggi, Antonio Tarver, Roy Jones, and Goldia. I forget what his full name is, but everybody will know the other three, right? The other three or four. So the main event was Jean Pascal against Fang Long Meng. And Meng was the number one contender for the 175-pound light heavyweight title on the IBF side. Things didn't go that well for him, and he ended up losing the decision. What happens with both men here?
Fan Long probably ends up as an opponent to someone that's really good coming around, and we'll go, oh, he fought Pascal and he was like good, I guess, and that'll happen. And Pascal, it's like, few observations. Are we going to look past like his PED thing a couple years ago? Because it feels like we're looking past that, like kind of at the elephant in the room with Pascal. Kind of strange, his like career resurgence towards the end of his career. Like, that's a little weird. Not saying that one equals the other, but it's like people kind of look at that. I personally think he's the number four guy in the light heavyweight division. I think Pascal is slightly above Joe Smith Jr. I know that's like a hot take, but Pascal is a weird fighter in the sense where it's like, he's not extremely talented, but he hits really friggin' hard. And if he hits you, it's like, it's really going to change a fight. Like, look at the Marcus Brown fight. He's like losing every round until he lands a punch. It's like literally just a punch drops Marcus Brown. It's like in this fight, he's losing a lot of rounds, getting rocked, lands a punch, sways the fight. So, I mean, even with Kovalev, when Pascal fought Kovalev, it's like that first Kovalev fight was a close fight. So, I mean, Pascal is one of these strange guys where it's like he's putting together like a really, really good career. I guess, do we just look past the fact that he failed a PED test is kind of like the bigger question, because he's basically like a Hall of Fame level fighter, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for this one, you know, I was told by the good folks of Pro Box TV that he did go under testing for this fight, and he had random testing and multiple testing, so they did not want to go through an embarrassing moment, considering it was their inaugural event.
Well, that's good. I mean, like, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here. I'm just trying to be like an honest person. I have a spiritual relationship with God, so it's hard for me to lie about things. Makes that, and it's like with Pascal, it's like, look, he's obviously one of the best guys, but we don't talk about that with Beterbiev, Bivol, or Vizordo because they haven't failed tests. In boxing, it's like we almost act like it's like we shouldn't bring up when people have failed a test, when it's like someone's life is on the line. And I'm not saying I'm some crazy doping advocate, but I am saying like it deserves mentioning whenever you talk about Pascal to bring this up. Now, I understand if you were to interview Pascal and you bring it up, he has every right to leave or call you a dick because that's messed up. But to construct his narrative at this point, it's worth mentioning.
Actually, you know what? Marquise Johns at nyfights.com, he did bring that up, and he was actually cool about it and just explained to him the situation. So he wasn't a dick about it. So that's always good. Now, what do you think about the potential of maybe him against Zerto, right? Zerto to stay busy while the other belts are being fought against and all that, if he doesn't get the Bivol fight.
I love it. See, I don't like the Bivol fight because they already fought. And it's like, I hate when the fights happen again and we've already seen it. And do you really think the outcome is going to be different? And shout out to Pascal for being a reasonable person. Love to hear when boxers are reasonable adults. Zerto is a good fight. The fight I want to see can't happen. It's Joe Smith versus Pascal because they're mirror images of each other. And I'm just wondering which one's the more effective style. I mean, how do you see the Zerto fight? Zerto's basically trending towards his apex mountain and Pascal's kind of coming down the mountain. I think the more interesting fight for me is Joshua Buatsi, who had a tough fight with Craig Richards. Why not make Pascal versus Joshua Buatsi? Because Buatsi's 6 years into being a pro and he hasn't really gone to the world level yet. That's a very interesting fight for me to see if Buatsi can get to that next tier.
Yeah. And so in a nutshell, you know, John Pascal winning on Friday night has put him right back in the picture of potentially getting another big payday.
And this is the second Pro Box card where basically their main event winner gets a chance at a big opportunity. Jimmy Kelly beating Knut Islam found him in a Jaime Munguia opportunity. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much creating a pathway to big fights for these fights.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see what it is. And then as far as Pro Box TV is concerned, you know, they are doing a whole bunch of different things there with podcasts with Roy Jones and them and shoulder programming. So it looks like and they're not exclusively discussing just their events. They're just talking about boxing, period. So it looks like it might be something that people are going to latch on to more and more as the time comes and as they see more events get put on by them.
It's a good show. Like, it's a good show. They're just giving you good fights. They might not be the fighters you want to see, but they're fights you want to see. That's basically the premise.
And then let's see. So a couple of announcements here. You know, I thought this was an interesting approach to marketing. Ryan Garcia is doing a Snapchat series, like a Snapchat original series where he's talking about his battles with, you know, anxiety and all that and depression and stuff. But the fact that he's doing it on that platform, which there's not a whole lot of people doing that specifically. So I feel like it's just another outlet for fighters to maybe get their story out there and gain more exposure. What do you think about that?
Also makes me feel old because I know for a fact I'm not going to consume that and I have no interest in going on Snapchat to see it. And it just makes me realize how out of touch I am with young people.
Gotcha. All right. And speaking of Jimmy Kelly that you mentioned, he's going to be fighting Jaime Munguia June 11th. The announcement of this fight was a little disappointing because, you know, we thought that we were going to either get Danny Jacobs or we were going to get, you know, him in a bigger fight, just period. But this fight with Jimmy Kelly, you just kind of took everybody by surprise. And I don't know, it's just not an exciting fight. Now it could be that he's testing the 168 division with this fight and didn't want to take a hard fight just to kind of see how that feels. But I don't know. What do you think? Are you thinking that he's just testing the waters here, or is this just like a stay busy fight? And like, what do you think about that?
I really don't care about Jaime. He basically went from being a world champion to a prospect. I've lost a lot of interest, and this low key feels like the Dennis Hogan fight where we have no anticipation. And one of these fights, he's going to mess around and lose if he keeps not stepping up, because like Jaime Munguia is a good puncher who hits hard, but what he does is replicated in a lot of gyms in America. So it's a very delicate dance to kind of hand select these opponents, because one time someone's going to have the fight of their career. And if you lose to a Jimmy Kelly, everyone is just waiting to laugh at you because you're not giving us those fights. And it's a very dangerous dance to just kind of play with us and say, OK, we're going to do this one and this one, because all the boxing Twitter and all the boxing fans just want to see you fail because you're not giving us the hardcores a fight we care about.
Yeah, no, that's you make a great point. And we were talking about Benavidez earlier and 168 pounds. David Morrell sent out, you know, his folks sent out a press release, and he was responding to some of the things that David Benavidez was saying to him. Now, his headlining quote was, "After my fight, I'm going to go make you my bitch." That's what he's saying to David Benavidez. I kind of like him stepping out a little bit and talking shit and kind of driving interest towards him and the potential Benavidez fight. If they're not going to make the Plant or Charlo fight.
I mean, at least it's a fight I care about with two fighters I like. You know, David Benavidez, I think, might be one of the best fighters of this era. And David Morrell's interesting. And it's like, when did boxers have to be friends? Like, I kind of like it when they hate each other. Like, it's kind of more fun. Rolly reminded me that, like, we don't always have to be gentlemen. So it's like, I don't know. I'm into it, you know?
Yeah, I'm into it too. We'll see how it goes. He's got a fight coming up in a couple weeks, and then after that, let's see what happens. Now we're gonna get into the really interesting stuff. June 7th, officially, in a way, Nonita Dornier 2, the rematch is on ESPN Plus. Man, it's like I can't wait for this.
I know you're a lower weight Abe, but this is probably like the most inconvenient time ever for a boxing match. It's like, let's give it to you on like, what is it, Monday or Tuesday morning at like 3 a.m. on a work day for me, like pretty much like the most off brand time for me to ever wake up.
Yeah, I think this is going to have heavy rotation on the replay. You know, it's good. It's going to be on the ESPN Plus. So, you know, you wake up in the morning, press play, and then, you know, catch up on everything else. But the main event is probably not going to happen until, what, 6:37 East Coast of time. So probably like 4:30 your time.
Yeah, like 3:30, I imagine like a 3 to 3:30 start time. I mean, I feel like Supreme Boxing must be rubbing their hands together because they know that if there's a viral clip, more people will tune into these like a top rank IG Supreme Boxing, like these big IG pages, Fight Hub, because it, New York Fights, because it's like that clip is probably going to be seen more than the fight itself, because people will be like, oh yeah, this happened. You know, that's, I feel like it's like a social media boxing website dream, because like most people are not going to go back and watch the fight, I feel.
Yeah, but us boxing nerds will. And this is going to be a tremendous fight. I think that I think Nonito Donaire is going to, it might resemble the first one a little bit, but I think he's going to make slight adjustments that is going to make it interesting in the cards later. But in a way, he's going to end up getting the decision.
I have no clue. I always go with the younger guy in the rematches. That's kind of like my general rule. They're basically like the same fighter. It's just in a ways younger. Like they both have good power and timing. That being said, like the one thing I did see when they fought last time was in a way, doesn't really like it when his power doesn't affect the other guy. And that was something that was really, really cautionary in that fight was, oh, yeah, if the other guy can take the shots and is willing to exchange with him, he's not like a huge fan of like a even firefight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that. It reminds me of something that Andre Ward once said about Kovalev, right? Like once that aura of boogeyman kind of goes away and people don't respect it no more, then it's like open season. I think this might be it. Do we see a trilogy though?
I mean, possibly. I mean, like the closer this fight comes, the more I think Nonito has a real shot of winning this fight, because it's like in a way has been about as inactive as you could be for this level. And Donaire is actually fighting the higher level guys recently and kind of like looking better than he usually has. So, I mean, a lot of things. Also, coach Jesse Vargas, low key as well, kind of keeping everything going. But I don't know, man. I just feel like in a way there was a wave in like 2018, 2019 when Lukey and Abe started talking. And that's when Inoue was supposed to rise up and really be on those rankings. I don't want to say he completely missed his era, but it's really feeling like he's missing like some of that prime, brutal knockouts, getting the world stopped, because it just bothers me. The world isn't stopping to see this fight because he's a transcendent talent, and that's startling.
Yeah. I mean, like George Washington Duke said on Rocky V, don't watch the parade go by. So we'll see how it goes, man. Excited for that one. All right. Now, this is the fight that, according to everyone, no one wants to see. But according to those same everyone, everybody wants to see. Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin, Numero Tres, September 17th. What do you think? What are you thinking? Do you think that this was the right move by Canelo?
I mean, I think it has to happen because we're about to hit a financial recession. Like when financial industry times, like Financial Times, are saying like, hey, everybody, like we're about to hit a physical cliff, like a financial cliff and fall off. Like DAZN basically was started with the idea of we're going to get big Anthony Joshua fights and we're going to get Canelo Triple G3. And that's going to basically be our company. I feel like DAZN wanted this fight to happen. Canelo losing, now he needs to make this fight. This is a really dangerous fight for Canelo because I feel like Golovkin is going to be like on his Malcolm X by any means necessary for this fight. And he's going to like do everything possible to just absolutely destroy Canelo's legacy, because even though he's looking older, he's like really kind of saving himself for, I feel like, one last war. And people forget Golovkin won those first two fights, in my opinion. And it's like he kind of has his number, in my opinion.
It's funny you should say that, because I mentioned that same thing to somebody recently. I felt like Triple G was saving a little bit in the tank for this one, for the hopes of this third fight with Canelo, because this is the one that he really, really wants. And for those that are like, oh, nobody wants to see this fight, I'm going to tell you something right now. Upon this announcement, the announcement itself, I'm looking at the statistics, right? The website statistics and everything. And they're going through the roof. The announcement is everywhere. Everybody picks up the announcement. This is the thing that people don't understand. And I tweeted this early in the week. These two guys are backed by Fortune 500 companies. They have millions of dollars of marketing firms. And all types of companies backing them. Okay. The money is there. They have a proven track record of two other fights that are entertaining. They are high level and they're competitive. We can't say that Canelo against Charlo or Benavidez is going to be at a certain level, but we can say that Canelo versus Triple G is at a certain level because we've seen it twice already. And people don't understand that. And with the money stuff, you know, they got Hennessy, they got Jordan, they got Hublot, all these companies, they got the whatever. They got all these companies that are backing both guys. And trust me, both of those sides, they wanted to have both of those faces on a poster next to their product leading into this. This is going to be a massive, massive event.
It reminds me of Pacquiao versus Marquez 4, maybe Pacquiao Marquez 3, where it's like, as hardcore boxing fans, we truly don't care because both guys kind of feel probably about as uninteresting as they've ever felt. But to the random person, they see Canelo, they see Triple G, this will get them excited. I think that as the fight gets nearer, it'll get us excited. But I think this is going to be one of those Twitter timeline fights where it's like, oh, Triple G's winning the first round. Oh, Triple G's winning the second round. Oh, you should see this. Canelo's coming. Like, I think it's going to be a fight where people aren't excited because it's happening 3 years too late. And it's also Golovkin's not what he once was. That being said, I still think Golovkin just, I think Golovkin's like Tommy Hearns for Ray Leonard. He's just always going to be a problem because some styles are just hard for guys to fight.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that, you know, getting, seeing the reaction from the casuals, especially like in, you know, the athletes and everything else, you know, they don't watch boxing, but you tell them Canelo Triple G and they like, okay, yeah, I'm paying for that, because the last two times that I paid for a pay-per-view for those two guys, they came through. So I'm paying for that. It's a proven thing. And I think I want to see it. I've written articles about it saying that this is the fight that everybody wants to see, no matter whether they want to say that publicly or not. But this is it. This is the one. This is the big one.
Little frustrated that, like, we're already at 5 pay-per-views and gas is $6.15 in California right now. Pretty tone deaf of boxing to basically just throw it on boxing fans to be like, hey, can you just fork out the bill on like any fight where we have to pay fighters instead of paying them? Like, it's like the most boxing thing ever to be like, eh, instead of like you being a fight fan and we're going to give you the fights or put it on one of your subscription plans, we're going to need an extra $80 on top of the gas you're spending, on top of groceries being $70 extra. Little fed up with that, can't lie. And even though all these fights go out on my taxes, it's still frustrating.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think that going into this year, we knew that that was, that had the potential of happening because they lost a year of revenue due to the pandemic, right? And the second year coming off of the pandemic, they, you know, still lost some revenue because they couldn't have max capacity crowds. So it is frustrating, but you kind of had to know that that was going to happen. Now, let me ask you this, or let me run this by you. I feel like Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin, the whole story behind it reminds me of a trilogy, of a famous trilogy, because of how these fights are happening. It reminds me of Leonard and Duran. Now, I say that because first fight, super close. Duran won, obviously. Second fight had the controversial no mas. But when it was time for, you know, Duran to get that get back, and he wanted that Leonard fight badly, that third one, Leonard made him wait 10 years. And, you know, he waited him out. And then the third fight ended up not being anything close to whatever the first two fights were. So I feel like, you know, Canelo kind of did the same thing, right? He made Golovkin wait, you know, almost like punishing him, because he said he didn't want him to make money off of his shine. But now here we are. So what are your thoughts on the comparison? And do you think the end result will be what the third Leonard Duran fight was, where it didn't live up to the expectation that most thought?
Well, I think the worst case scenario, we'd get old Golovkin in there with a somewhat younger Canelo, and he's just beating the hell out of him. And it's just like sad. And then it's like the whole trilogy just comes down to Canelo just beats the hell out of him in the third fight. And then people skip the first two fights. I think that's the big danger for Golovkin, is he could be an old guy and just look old in there and get beat up. And everyone always remember, it's like Pacquiao had a bunch of good fights with Marquez, but people always jump to Marquez knocked him out in the fourth fight and they look past all the other fights. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but it's like, it's a fair comparison because this is what Canelo is going to choose to do. He's the money guy. Everything right now is money, greed. I'm the A side. I'm a real boss. we're not hearing a lot of James Toney's anymore. James Toney beats, what was it, Duroff? And the first thing he says is he wants to fight Lennox Lewis. You know, he wins the cruiserweight title. He wants to fight Lennox Lewis. We're not hearing a lot of people talking about going out and taking the brass ring and being the greatest, but we sure are talking about people who are talking about they're a Fortune 500 company. My earning potential is better than yours. It's just like boxing is like ghetto stocks and bonds with people that don't really understand any of it, but they like to talk to you about a bunch of stuff I don't care about.
Yeah, no, I get that. I still think that, you know, it has the potential of going down that road where, you know, it doesn't live up to the hype. And then I feel like those that are tuning in on the casual side, you know, this may be, you know, the one opportunity to get them, you know, hooked for a little while at least. And then maybe we lose that opportunity if the fight ends up sucking.
I mean, if the fight sucks, bro, people are going to trash this one and go, man, both these guys are the worst. Canelo's ducking Bivol. Golovkin's always sucked. I mean, boxing, like, look, this is how ridiculous boxing fans are. In any other sport, like, if you're a pro basketball player, people are like, man, you're a pro basketball player. And then they go, you made the all-star team. That's like a world champion. They're like, that's an all-star right there. You need to respect him. In boxing, I had a guy named Shawoon Humes or something tell me Oscar Valdez isn't an elite fighter, and then he told me that he wished more fans would talk like him and stand up for the right that Oscar isn't a good elite fighter. And I'm thinking Oscar Valdez is probably the number two guy behind Shakur, a former world champion, and he's not elite. So elite basically means Shakur Stevenson and then everyone else is good, I guess, and then the majority of boxers suck. Because there's not a lot of guys better than Oscar. And this is the ridiculous scenario we get. And I understand it from a fight fan's perspective. You're paying the money. You like seeing fights. But think about the humanity of being a fighter. Think about how ridiculous that standard is that you put 20 years of your life into being a boxer. And now if you're not in like the top three in the entire world as a pro, your life basically is meaningless. I mean, that's basically what we're looking at. So imagine the more ridiculous, sensational takes with two of the biggest stars in boxing fighting each other.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. So we're going to move on to this weekend's fight. So we have Gervonta Davis versus Rolando Romero. But before we go into that one, I want to talk about a fighter that is on the undercard, who I have an article on coming out on fansided.com. That's Jesus Ramos Jr., right? He's fighting Luke Santamaría. Luke Santamaría fought his uncle.
Uncle Abel.
And, you know, so Abel lost that decision. But Jesus Ramos Jr. he's the goods. He's the real deal, 154. What do you think? What do you think about this matchup that he has Saturday night? And do you feel like it's time for, you know, for them to press the gas a little bit on his career?
I mean, he's fighting the best guys he can. He fought Brian Mendoza. Who was the guy before that? It was Javier Molina, who just basically beat up Robbie Davies Jr., where Eddie Hearn's like, we won the fight, but he's got to do better. Like, he gave him a losing speech, but he won. We got to do better. So, I mean, he beats that guy. He beats Javier Molina, 2008 Olympian. He beats Vladimir Hernandez. Now he's going in with Luke Santamaría, who's beaten Devin Alexander. He's beaten, off the top of my head, was it Mike Fox? Did he have a close fight with Paul Kroll? Really, only really good. So he's moving up in weight. Don't love that Santamaría is moving up in weight. Do you think this is get back season 2022? That like they're doing this one right after Uncle Abel took the L? Do you think that his nephew is trying to get a little get back?
Oh, he told me he is.
He said, give me those quotes on that. What's the get back gang on this?
He was like, nah, man, he beat my uncle and it's time for me to get my revenge.
Is he gonna stop him? Is he saying we're gonna sign up for a KO?
He's not saying that, but you know, he's definitely confident and is motivated for this fight for sure.
Yeah, I think Jesus Ramos really reminds me a lot of Jose Ramirez, both in mannerisms and extreme talent. And it's just wild to me how like a fighter who's fighting this good of fights and is this talented is this under the radar. Like, I feel like, you know, when kids used to have rappers they like, but they didn't want to share them with people. It's like, they're my personal favorite. I don't want to share them. It's like, I feel like Jesus Ramos is my favorite boxer that like the world isn't sharing with me. Like, I'm like, okay, I appreciate you, Jesus, but not every, like, and it's like, I'm just waiting for that moment where people realize, oh, he's really good. Because to me, it's so friggin' obvious.
Yeah, no kidding, man. He is. And, you know, I thought he was gonna be able to stick around 147, but we, you know, we talked about that in the article too. And he feels a lot more comfortable at 154. So I think he's gonna be at 154 long enough to contend for a title shot.
Also, I think he wears a size small. He looks like he has a tight-fitting t-shirt at all the events. That's another observation I've noticed. Jesus Ramos probably has the tightest-fitting t-shirt of the fighters on the media day. That's the stuff I look at, the analysis. And he's massive for 154. I mean, I'd like to see him in there with like the guy, the likes of a Tony Harrison. I'd like to see him in there with an Erickson Lubin. I'd like to see him in there with Fandora, with Tim Zhu, Charles Conwell, Israel Madrimayoff. Let's pretend these networks don't exist and let's just start throwing out fighters' names in these rankings, because honestly, it's up to us to just throw out the matchups. And then if the matchups draw numbers and people are intrigued by these stories, guess what? They get made. It's all about money and business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And speaking of money and business, we are going to the main event, Gervonta Tank Davis versus Rolando Rolly Romero.
No Lara?
What's that?
I said, we're skipping Lara. We don't get a Lara feature. We don't get a Lara segment.
I'm steaming right through the Lara segment.
There's no Lara. I like Lara with the fitted cap. He looked like at least 5 years younger at the media day with a fitted cap and a jumpsuit. Like, he looked like a cool parent showing up to pick up his kid. I like that look.
When I saw Leonard Ellerbe tweet that Lara is the most avoided middleweight in the division, I shut off my phone.
I feel like he's a welterweight. That's why, like, I don't understand why he's going to middleweight. Is like, I've never looked at, like, to me, Jesus Ramos is more of a middleweight than Arislandi Lara is. And that bothers me because I feel like Lara's prime for one of these fights where it's like a big guy just kind of walks through him. I don't know if it's Spike O'Sullivan, but like, he's definitely playing with fire as a fighter that like half of his career, people didn't really enjoy it. I feel like there's a contingency of boxing fans that just want to say, okay, especially with him giving Canelo that really ugly, weird fight. There are people that really just want to write off his whole career. So he's got to be very careful the way he ends at middleweight.
Yeah, no, without question. But the main event, Gervonta Davis, Rolando Romero, lies being said. They each promoting it in their own unique way. Tank with his lack of words, so to speak, and, you know, making the media rounds on the pop culture scene, hitting, you know, Gillian Wallow and all these other platforms that have millions and millions of viewers.
What's this interview with Gilly like? Does Gilly just talk and is he just kind of there like enjoying Gilly's company?
For the most part, I think that's what it is. They don't give him too much. The one thing that Gilly brought out where he said, whether Tank at any point went to them to Mayweather Promotions and demanded certain fights. And he said, no, he said he never did. He said he was told who he needed to fight and he fought him.
Okay. I mean, Tank is like pound for pound one of the guys that I've never sought out an interview of his. And in fact, like if I see him going to the podium, I'm like, OK, I can just read an article about this. Like there's never like I need to watch this live. Rolly is really like a good person, in my opinion, like just a good person in general. And he's absolutely hilarious. Like, this is a really close fight, man. People are acting like Rolly is outclassed. He hits really hard. And if he can take Tank's power, this is going to be a funky fight. It's Memorial Day weekend. It's really hot where I live. It's 105 right now. I'm sure it's really hot where you live. I'm having people over during the day. They're probably going to end up drinking a little bit. It's Memorial Day weekend. We're saluting the troops. We're paying homage to this great country. We're paying tribute to people like Abe for what they've done. So, you know, we're going to consume some adult beverages. Bad purchases happen, but this is going to be a good purchase. I'm going to buy the fight. And you know what? I might make a fight fan because someone might come over They might drink a little bit and they might watch a fight and like a Jesus Ramos. So I think it's kind of cool that they put it on this weekend, and hopefully it's a good fight. What do you think, Abe? You know more than me.
Yeah, I don't. You know, it's an interesting fight, right? If you watch the betting lines, they've dropped down like 200 points. So some of them were like as high as plus 770 for Romero to win. And if you look today, it's at plus 500. So that dramatic 24-hour change means there's a ton of people putting money on Romero for.
Can I speak on this?
Yeah, go ahead.
On my IG alone, I've seen one person put 5,000 on Rolly, another person put 10,000, and three other people put 7,000. So that's just my IG alone. I've seen people put that alone could be the spread change. That amount of money could be it. But that just tells you how much money is being put in on Rolly.
Yeah. And, you know, with Rolly, one of the more interesting takes I heard Ryan Garcia make on, I think it was ES News. He said the first five rounds, Rolly will control with his awkwardness. And then the next four rounds, you know, Javante will come on. But then the last four rounds after, or three rounds after that, it's up in the air. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. But he did mention that if Rolly's going to catch Javante, he has to catch him early. And he does have the punchy power to maybe stop Tank.
I feel like it's a three-round fight for Rolly. He's got to press on the gas. I heard Roy say that he thinks this could be like Hagler-Hearns. I think best case scenario, we get that, because if Rolly clips Tank, we're getting a shootout. My biggest fear is one of two things. Rolly comes out and tries to be awkward and use a jab and length, and then it just gets weird. Or Tank moves around and tries to set up an uppercut by moving, and Rolly's coming forward aggressively. Those are my fears, because that could create, like, we basically want this fight to be entertaining at some point because we're entertained by the trash talk. My biggest fear is we get a fight where we're staring at our cell phone the whole time saying, I knew it. I shouldn't have spent 75. I knew I should. So like my fear leading in is I just hope that we get two guys who are going to throw the playbook out and are just going to try to light the other one up.
Now, do you think that Javante's last, I would say since the Pedraza fight, that those opponents leading up to this one, have prepared him at all for fighting a guy that's naturally at 135, maybe should be fighting at 140, and possesses punching power. It's not coming up two weight classes, is not coming down a weight class to satisfy the weight limit. What do you think about that?
No, I don't think he's prepared, but I mean, he's also supposed to be like an all-time great fighter. So it's like, if we're expecting greatness from you, you need to do great things. He's what we call an entertainment fighter. So he's putting on entertaining shows for the fans. He goes on notable things. So now he has to live up to his billing of being a great. We've said that you're great. Now be great, champ. If not, we're going to strip you of that label, and don't complain to us if we strip you. I wish someone would say I was great, because then I'd have to live up to greatness. Mm-hmm. No one's out here anointing me as a great boxing reporter. If they put the label great on you for a boxer, that means you have the potential to be someone that is archived in history as being one of the best to ever do it. This is one of the first legs in Gervonta's career where he has to fight a wild madman puncher and really define himself that he's not just a guy that beats guys under these odd circumstances, because I personally don't believe that's what Tank's doing, but people can easily make that case right now.
Yeah. And, you know, with Tank, does he, even if he knocks out Rolly, it seems like if he knocks out Rolly, people will say, well, he was supposed to do that. And then if he loses the Rolly, they're going to be like, well, you know, he was all hype. So it seems like he's more in a lose-lose situation than anything else.
Yeah, it's a terrible fight for tank in many ways, because it's like Rolly's gonna say a lot of trap. Like, did you see the thing you put on Twitter about the lips the other night? Like, he's just making fun of Tank in ways where it's like, even if Tank wins, people are still gonna make fun of Tank. Like, he's just really funny and observant at making fun of you. He's almost like Tank has a, or Rolly has a little bit of Jake Paul in him, where it's like he just knows how to like make fun of you to a point where you can't really get back. Like, you just have to accept it. And it's like, say Rolly somehow loses like really fast. Well, then Rolly's going to get a pass. They're going to be like, well, Rolly just stepped up. He wanted this fight. Like, I feel like Rolly is kind of a genius, because the way he's positioned himself is, even if he loses, he's the one that was willing to fight a guy who's like a superstar. And he kind of like talked Tank into this fight. Like, Tank really shouldn't be fighting him. It's the willpower of Rolly just calling him out and like kind of playing to Tank's ego, basically like saying, if you don't fight me, you're a coward. And I think that that's what kind of makes this compelling, is how does Tank approach a fight that seems so personal in this regard?
Yeah. And for Rolly, I mean, if he wins, you know, forget about it. Like, he can go up to superstardom as far as the level of popularity. But you're right. Like, if he loses, you know, I don't think he loses anything. He still gets, you know, big fights down the road as well.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, I was thinking about this the other day, I didn't really realize this, but Gervonta Davis's rise kind of like mirrored that of Chief Keef. It's like that whole music wave of like drill music. Like, I'm older, right? We're both older. We didn't really think drill music was a thing, because like that would have been like, if you're 12 years old, you listen to music about killing people and like you really think it's a thing. I just assume that's what most music is. But there's like a wave of music where it's like it sounds a certain way and you have guns in the videos and you're extremely violent. It's like, in many ways, Gervonta like wears the clothes that that music represents, has a fighting style that that style of music about discretion speaks to. It's like he has the, he speaks to this modern culture in a way that it seems like no other boxer can. And I'm not sure if that's like the environment he's from or the person he is, but no other boxer has really captured that energy. And it feels like this drill music movement is like a massive movement in America. Well, really the world now, but it's like, it feels like it's a big thing. Kind of like how, like, I didn't realize trap music was a thing. I just thought it was like rap music in the South, but you have to call it trap. It's like this drill wave is a big thing. And it's like, I view it like Joe Calzaghe. Remember, I was connected to that movement. What, I forget what it was called, like Cool something, but it was like the Train Spotting movies. And it's like these hip British people that look like they're on heroin and they're philosophical. It's like Joe Calzaghe was spiritually connected to that. And that's why people, like certain people, would tune into his fights. I feel like Tank is like ingrained in young people that like drill music. They knew about Tank for most of their existence while they're consuming this. And now they're on this journey with him. And we don't have many fighters like that.
Yeah, I mean, which is why, you know, and I think we talked about this before, you know, commercially, and you know, I still stand by this. Him and Ryan is the biggest commercial fight in boxing that can be made.
I think Canelo versus Andy Ruiz.
Okay.
No, I'm serious. I think, you mean to tell me if you put that fight in Mexico City, Canelo versus Andy Ruiz, and we get the Andy Ruiz from the second Joshua fight, and we get Canelo, and Canelo, people won't be like all over the place to see that fight. Imagine if you put Rolly versus Ryan, Canelo versus Andy Ruiz, that would probably do the biggest pay-per-view number ever in the history. And don't put a Jake Paul on that card. Don't put Jake Paul Anderson Silva. We're doing 7 million buys. People would be so mad, but it's true.
Oh man, no, I'm telling you, Ryan and Tank, they'll sell out that Raiders Stadium. They'll do it. I'm telling you, they will. It'll be the biggest fight. And I think that they're still gearing towards that at some point. But like we always said, don't fuck up the money. Don't mess up
the church's money.
Don't wait too long. Do it while it's still hot. Because once somebody loses, there it goes. I mean, just like as hot as, you know, at least for boxing fans, you know, Charlo and Jarrett Hurd was at one point. You know, missed the boat on that. Spence and Keith Thurman missed the boat on that. So, you know, let's stop missing the boat on these fights that, you know, could potentially generate really big numbers.
Well, I mean, the creme de la creme is Wanma versus Gamboa. There was absolutely no reason for that. But Pastor Luke, he always says, like, when the collection plate is going around the church, you need to make the fight before the congregation leaves the church. Like, a lot of times we're spitting the gospel and then everyone's gone home to get a nice turkey sandwich. And then we offer them that fight and they've already gone home from the sermon. And that's the issue we have in boxing, is we pass around the collection plate and now the pot of money is there. And then one of these fighters will tip over that jar and people go, oh, my money's now on the floor. And then they'll grab the money. And then, you know, it's wrong.
Now, before we go into just the final stuff, the way too early prediction, Lukey, give it to me. Canelo Triple G 3, who wins and how?
Golovkin split decision.
Woo! You heard it here first.
Golovkin split decision, and then he retires on the spot and won't give him another fight. And he just goes off real angry and ornery, no media interviews, just real mad and stuff. And Canelo, like, this is the year of failure for Canelo. That's what I predict.
Wow, interesting stuff. That's the Lukey hot take. Well, listen, as always, I appreciate you joining me on the podcast. We covered a lot of different things. For those that don't know, Lukey got YouTube pages, websites, a whole bunch of different stuff going on. So this is going to be his opportunity to plug all those things. So please listen closely. Lukey, plug away.
I mean, I'm not going to really plug, because that's always kind of like sad when guys are on these segments, like, not to say if you come on my show and you do it, but it's always like, I don't want to be like super thirsty. Look, I'm on ITRboxing.com. My name is Lukey, and involve it with boxing. You can find pretty much everything else I do. Go on Twitter. I'm making people mad all the time, but I got one new thing for you, Abe. I got something for you. I might be writing a book. And the book that I'm writing is a boxing book. I wanted to write a narrative book, but then I realized nobody's going to want to read a fictional story by me. So I got to start with boxing, because that's where my appeal is. So I got to go there. It's the handbook of everything I wish I had have known coming into boxing. So it's a guidebook for someone coming into the sport. So first off, things like picking a gym, picking a manager. How do you know if you can go pro? What's your success rate going to be if you were a pro and you don't pass certain thresholds? Why do you need to remove emotion from boxing if you want to be a successful pro? Dealing with a loss in a fight. When it's all over, what do you need to have set aside? What are the things you're doing? So I'm working on that. It's probably going to be about 130 pages. Maybe we'll get some famous trainers to get quotes. But honestly, maybe it's a pipe dream. I would really, really, really like to write this thing and have it out for Christmas time so you could put it in someone's stocking. That's an exclusive. Do you want the name of it, the tentative name? Of course you do. Yeah, we're giving you the exclusive. It's the Modern Handbook of Boxing. How about that and we had to put modern, you know, so what do you think of that name, Abe? Is that a good name?
I think it's a good name. I think that there is value for something like that, especially with these young fighters coming up, because there's no online course for boxing, and there's no school you can attend. You either, you know, you basically going in there blind, and, you know, a handbook like this might be able to open people's eyes on certain things and guide them in the right direction.
And no disrespect, all day and night, kids' parents from the amateur program call me. So now, like, if I don't have time, go on Amazon or go on your nearest distributor, buy the book, read through the book, and then circle back with me. And then there's certain pages so you can look at it. You can hit me, because it's like my time is getting super thin, because I got like all these people hitting me up. And it's like, dude, like, I'm not even qualified to say this, but, oh, you know, this and that. So I'm putting out this book. We're not going to write it too long, because I know a lot of people in boxing aren't the biggest readers. A lot of people didn't go to college. We're thinking of people out there. A lot of people aren't high school grads. But I know a lot of people want to support me and they want the information. We're on our Socrates-ish. And I'm not saying that like a rapper. I'm saying we're really trying to get philosophical. We're trying to help these young people. I'm quoting John Dewey. We're quoting Ernest Shackleton. I'll give you one tidbit. This is the concept of the book. It's boxing teachers versus boxing leaders. Mm. You need a teacher to get you to your maximum potential as a fighter. But I don't think we need more teachers. I think we need more boxing leaders, because realistically, we need to shape young people into great citizens, like what John Dewey would say. So I think it's more valuable having people who can run rec centers or places where young people, whether they're pro or whatever, to be molded into people that have great skill sets that can then go hit the working world or go influence other people in a positive way. Because I think that sometimes we have teachers who might not be leaders, and then that can be a problem as well, because maybe they don't instill all the greatest things because they're just really talented at one thing, but then life itself might be too overwhelming. So that's like in the intro concept, is the difference between a boxing teacher and a boxing leader. That's one piece of game of many in the book.
Wow. You heard it here first. Luki, as always, I appreciate your time, and let's see what happens this weekend.
Man, I can't wait. I'm probably going to call you after the fight. I know the people aren't going to hear it, but I'm probably going to call you and be like, oh man, that was some good stuff. Like, remember when we did the WrestleMania recap? Like, I drank a few frosty ones, and then we were both kind of like, I don't even watch pro wrestling, but it was like Stone Cold came back. I felt like it was 1999. I think I hit a pillow with a kick and then hit it with a stunner. You know, where does this rate to you, Abe, for your listeners? Where's this rate on the scale of WrestleMania Saturday night? Like, how excited are you compared to WrestleMania?
Listen, I'm right there. I think because it's, you know, it's a long weekend. Memorial Day, you know, is really dedicated to those, you know, that have fallen, you know, have given their life for, you know, for this country. And so, you know, it being, you know, about them and understanding that family coming through potentially. And so, you know, it just feels right for a bunch of different reasons, but it's right there. It's right there in the level of excitement.
Okay. And also a reminder for your viewers, don't drink and drive. So if you drink, post up. There's nothing more irresponsible than doing that. And I wish Becky Lynch was on this, because I like seeing Becky Lynch. She was really fine. So I wish Becky Lynch was on this card. Maybe we could swap out Aris Landy Lara for Becky Lynch. Just put Becky Lynch in a 4-round swinger. No disrespect, Aris Landy Lara, but like, I don't want to see you fight Spike O'Sullivan in 2022. Like, it's just who wins Aris Landy Lara versus Jaime Munguia?
I think Jaime Munguia puts him away. And sends them into retirement.
Who raps both of them out? If they had to get rap songs, would Bad Bunny walk Aris Landy Lara out, and who would walk out Jaime?
Man, Jaime, I don't know. I don't know who Jaime would have walk out. But is it
cartel type guy? Would it be like a narco guy talking about all the stuff he's doing? I feel like that's very on brand. If you're a Mexican boxer, you need one of those guys.
Yeah. I tell you, man. All right, Luki, man. We'll cut this right here, and then we'll catch up soon, all right?
The Boxing Rush Hour Show, hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show.